Welcome to In the Money, sponsored by Flyer Financial Technologies, the company that builds cutting-edge technology designed to solve asset and wealth management firms' toughest trading workflows. In this podcast, we help advisors and asset managers understand how technology is transforming the wealth tech sector. We'll cover how to leverage technology for faster, smarter investment decisions, megatrends, and more. Now, on to the show.
Welcome to In the Money. I'm your host, Rusty Summer, and I am fortunate enough today to be joined by my very good friend, Verity Larson of Verisoft Consulting. And if you don't know Flyer FT, we power the fintech you love and use every day. So in this episode, we're going to be hitting a little bit of kind of what might be our New Year's resolution. And we're going to be thinking about fostering 2024 organic growth through technology improvements. I think that as people listen to and read other publications and podcasts, there are a lot of kind of year-end three things you should do or think about. But we thought, well, really firms at this point are looking at organic growth and how they continue to grow. So we wanted to tackle technology from that standpoint. Verity is a 20-year veteran in financial services. She has spent a lot of time recognizing pitfalls of kind of one-size-fits-all approach to investment technology. She founded a very disruptive technology consulting firm in 2015 and has committed to providing very unbiased guidance. And it's one of the things that she and her colleagues are really most known for. Over the last 8 years, she's built a resourceful team to help firms make tough fintech decisions in today's saturated market. So join us as we delve into Verity's journey and the evolving landscape of tailored solutions in finance. So let's start with one thing. And before we started recording, we were kind of talking about T plus one. And it seems to be to me that that's a little bit like Y2K. And not everybody really understands what this means. Where are we headed? What is it going to result in? So I guess, Verity, I'm going to start with, do people even know what that means? T plus one, how's that different than what's today? I don't know. What are your insights there?
Yeah. Thanks again, Rusty, for having me on the show today. And I think on the T plus one subject, it's really been quite interesting. The number of people in this industry that have been in the industry for years, sometimes even decades. When you start talking about the T plus one announcement that the SEC made, some people are still pretty clueless on what that actually means, which is really surprising. So what it actually means is it's the shortening of the US settlement cycle. So the SEC announced that it's going to be shortening the settlement cycle for US equities and corporate bonds from T plus two to T plus one. The T, of course, means trade. So trade plus 2 days or trade plus 1 day. And this change is going to actually be taking effect going to T plus one on May 28th in 2024.
Gotcha.
So, I mean, I think it's something that everybody should be relatively familiar with is the trade life cycle and the trade settlement delays. But that's really what we're talking about.
I feel really old because when I worked on a desk, it was T plus three.
Yes.
And yeah. So now we've gone T plus two. And we're going to be T plus one. And so as much as this may be kind of more important for maybe asset managers or specific, you know, institutional investment companies who are kind of trading away or they have SMA settlement that they're dealing with, even for wealth managers, this is a big change. You may not see it on your desktop, but behind the scenes, this is going to have some pretty profound impact. So I guess one of the questions that I'd like to think about is who should care? How are vendors preparing for this? And what should you be asking your vendors and your technology partners as you're approaching this?
Well, who should care? I mean, honestly, I think anybody that's in this investment industry should care. There's going to be an effect to everybody across that life cycle. And so every investment firm, every RIA, every asset manager, every wealth manager that's out there that is actually investing in stocks and bonds for their clients should be concerned about this. Similarly, on the sell side, there's obviously a lot of changes that they need to put into place to accommodate this increased settlement timeline. I think what I've been seeing is a lot of discussion about who needs to be more concerned. One of the interesting things I was reading recently is actually in an article by Wesley Bray in thetradenews.com. They had a great article. And one of the things that was talked about was how traders are actually going to be a lot more impacted and need to work more closely with operations just to ensure accuracy of data. Whereas this, of course, is being viewed as a settlement process, which technically is, you know, post-trade, doesn't really involve the traders, but there is going to be a heavy impact to the traders simply on that timeline, making sure that, you know, there's no delays, you know, or failed trades, the managing the cash positions, you know, making sure that they don't go overdrawn, or conversely, they don't build up too much cash. You know, all of these things are really going to be a core attention that the traders are going to need to make.
Yeah. And I think from a real world standpoint, when my client calls me and says, I need X number of dollars, instead of planning in advance 2 or 3 days, now you're really at a point where it's like, okay, well, that money's going to be in your account tomorrow. Mm-hmm. Right. And so there's a communication aspect, there are process impacts, you know, your client service team certainly needs to be aware of what's coming so that they can support you if you're the person who's implementing or actually managing those portfolios and you're not necessarily the one who's communicating with clients. So I think that as an organization, there's probably a level of understanding and awareness that needs to go around. Now, granted, you should be able to have a pretty simple conversation with your team to do it, but I think that that's an important thing to happen. Are there any other real world examples that you can think of that folks can be thinking about, whether it's kind of operational or client centric?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I would just say right now, every firm should be doing a complete review of their entire front to back process from the trade lifecycle. Everything from what's done on trade date to immediately after that, all the way through settlement, how that's touching, you know, from whether it's portfolio managers that are entering the trades to, you know, to the traders executing those trades, to the settlement process, to operations, you know, even just cash management, you know, client makes a contribution to their account and, you know, how is that going to be that? What's the investment decision process even going to be? There's a lot here. And I think, firms just need to start by doing a complete review of that.
That's a great suggestion. And I think that people do need to think hard about it. They need to make sure that they're prepared. Nobody wants to have a bad client experience in this, and there's no reason to. So all really good points. So maybe at this point, let's widen the conversation a little bit and let's talk about streamlining workflows and with a goal of having better outcomes. Because I think T+1, you know, is kind of the top of the triangle on that at the moment. And it's hard for me right now to not inject some conversation about AI. Everybody wants to talk about it. Everybody wants to be involved with it. I don't know. You know, people are jumping into this. And in many cases, and this is just my opinion and having talked to a bunch of people, there's really no defined goal a lot of times. It's like, wow, this is cool. Everybody's talking about it. I better have an initiative. What are you trying to do with it? And people just don't seem to necessarily be able to answer that question. So it's a little bit of a science experiment right now. What advice do you have for people who are thinking about AI, who are jumping in and have some sort of science fair project going on, or even maybe have a defined initiative?
Well, what I would say is people need to take a step back and make sure that they have automated. Automation, automation, automation. You should have lots of automation in your environment right now. If you don't have that underway where you have streamlined as many processes as possible, you should not even be talking about AI, because to me, AI requires data accuracy. I think a really good explanation here. So many people are used to a typical, you know, web search. You just plug in some words, you know, of what you're looking for, and it kicks back a bunch of results. And then you can kind of pick and choose from those results, you know, which direction you want to go in or what kind of best answers your question. With AI, it is one answer. Whatever you're putting in, what it returns is one result or one action item. You don't have choices. So the accuracy of AI is really dependent on the underlying data, the underlying inputs, you know, what exactly you're, you know, directing the system to do. I just kind of caution people, you know, AI is just not like a search engine. You know, you need to make sure that your systems are as accurate as possible. And of course, then we could certainly get into risks and all of that, of other things to consider.
Yeah, we're going to get there, I'm quite certain. it seems to me that, you know, as I listen to you, the big thing here is make sure before you go and build out this huge initiative around AI and automation that you've really thought about and worked through making yourself as good as you can be today, right? Yes. Make sure your systems are effective. Make sure that your processes are really buttoned up, because injecting something like this in the midst of some spaghetti soup is not going to make your spaghetti taste any better, right? So I would think about that. And I guess also crawl before you walk, before you run, right? Foundational work first is really important. And that's going to give you a better opportunity to be successful when you do get to having a really thoughtful approach to AI and what you're trying to do. So maybe talk a little bit about, you know, optimizing workflows. What are some of the things for portfolio managers or in order management systems, trading networks that people should be thinking about, or even examples of what you've seen as you've been out working with a number of your clients? You know, what are some of the number one things that they could be doing to optimize workflows that maybe not even require a huge lift?
Yeah. I mean, I think it starts with a review of your portfolios, their asset allocation, their target weighting models that you're trying to compare those against, just making sure that that is all correct, that it's in compliance, that that it meets, you know, what you've agreed on with your clients, what's signed in their IAAs, you know, all of that stuff. So start with the accounts, make sure that they are, that what you have there and how they're set up is correct.
And then
I'd say it's also about, you know, then it's about the accuracy of security data, you know, market data, making sure that that is accurate and that it's being updated consistently as well as automatically on a regular basis. And then I guess I'd also add is, you know, more like compliance rules. So making sure that any sort of restrictions are accurate. So doing a review of all that, making sure that they are working properly. I think sometimes too, people might actually build a rule around a restriction, but not thoroughly test it. And it may not actually be working as you expect it to. So it's not just about setting up the rule and just assuming you did it correctly, but actually put in test trades, you know, create a test scenario that should flag that restriction and make sure it's working properly.
Yep. I had the pleasure of hosting a CTO think tank, and we had 25 or so CTOs, COOs that joined and spent most of a day with us. And we hit a number of topics, but I just kind of want to use this as a way to button up the AI conversation. We talked about AI. They all had questions. Several of them had initiatives. But the one thing that really struck me that I had absolutely no idea about were some of the risks that were involved. Mm-hmm. Can you like enlighten people about some of the risks? I think that people think, oh, I'll just log into ChatGPT and off I go. Right? Yes. No, there are risks out there. I was shocked.
Yes. And actually, I had pulled up the results of a survey I wanted to share on this session here. So there's a survey by McKinsey that identified the top generative AI risks for organizations. The top one at 56% was inaccuracy, 53% was cybersecurity, 46% was intellectual property infringement, and then 45% was regulatory compliance. Anyway, when I, you know, kind of break it down, I would say biggest risks in any industry, but especially in ours, are privacy, security, inaccurate data results, and no legal regulations, you know. So if a firm is using AI based decisions, they may not be easily able to explain those decisions, which is a, you know, conflict against regulatory compliance, you know. And I'd say privacy, security, right? All these things are so critically important. I mean, it's just not, there's so many gaps in this technology right now that are still being buttoned up.
Here's one that one of the folks brought up that I, when I was talking in this group, and we've all probably used it, but have you ever used one of these like AI bots? You can have a conference call, a call with your client, you plug in the bot, it takes all the notes, it does the summary for you, and you get done. Mm-hmm. Huge time saver, really great. Guess what? The entire context of that meeting is now part of the public data model.
Correct.
So everything that your client just told you, is now part of the data model. So when you're talking about how much money they have, you're talking, that stuff's all out there now.
It is now public.
It's now public information.
Yeah.
It's scary.
Scary.
So be smart about what you're doing and think about it. It's not to say don't do it or don't engage with AI, but understand what you're getting into before you jump.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Right? Yes. Yeah. One of the things that I, you know, highly encourage and is talk to your compliance officers, right?
Yeah.
I think right now a lot of compliance team members are very reserved on the use of AI, and there's very limited use of those tools in organizations, rightly so, for exactly the example you just gave.
Yeah.
And you know, all the more reason you really need to make sure that your compliance team is on board with what's being used. And you know, this is just overall for the protection of the yeah. firm.
Absolutely. And your clients, right?
And so, your clients, absolutely.
And your clients, right? Yeah. So I recently spoke with a strategy consultant who surveyed 20-ish broker dealers about their 2024 strategic priorities. And what she had to say was very interesting to me, because to the firm that she spoke to, data was the highest ranked item for what they were thinking about for 24. And I think that it probably has a little bit to do with the maturation of CRMs and kind of how those have become really a centralized hub for client engagement and workflows, digital innovation, and then certainly organic growth, right? Those were kind of the four top things. And it was very interesting how consistent across those large broker dealers that was the same. And I think that there's some similarities within kind of the RIA asset manager and wealth space too. You know, where do you find firms, I guess, are most lacking and talk about high, you know, ROI considerations? What should they be thinking about in that regard? Because we are trying to talk about here generally, you know, how do people scale their business and how do they, you know, get better outcomes? So what are some of the things you can do to get really big return on investment?
Well, I mean, when it comes to data, it is about ensuring the ownership of your data, that you have full access to it. You know, some of this gets into, even if you're out there shopping for new technology and looking to convert to a different system, understand what access you'll have to your data, what ownership you have of your data, because you'd be surprised the number of systems out there and vendors that don't give you full access, don't give you full rights to your data. So understand what you have. I'd then say, like you were mentioning, CRM is becoming the hub 100%. In fact, we at our company, when we're talking with our clients, one of the things that we are really enforcing is the use of that CRM as the central location of data. Doesn't necessarily mean that it's the primary source of data, but it's the central location of data. And really that's just to help streamline communication across the firm as well as with your clients. So I'd say then we start talking about integration, ensuring that systems are being updated properly, that you're not doing duplicate entry. I mean, we could go down a whole rabbit hole there on the effectiveness of your processes and making sure that you're as efficient as possible.
Totally. I completely agree with that. I think that's pretty fair assessment of things. So as we're trying to, I think, I don't want to say wrap things up, but we're kind of coming towards the end. You know, let's talk about technology improvements, because we've hit on data, we've hit on workflow, we've hit on T+1. If you're thinking about all of that, you know, how do you improve your technology stack? Because I think that when I've had experience doing that in the past, where maybe I'm replacing part of it or I'm upgrading, it can very much feel like a Herculean effort. And yes. So it's hard, right? And there are a lot of reasons why you should be constantly reviewing, you know, what tools you have in place, and specifically, you know, in the context of how do I grow my organization? How do I retain my clients? How do I manage risk, both maybe investment-wise and organizationally? You know, what are you seeing with your clients right now, Verity?
I would actually say a lot of firms are doing that review of their existing technology mm-hmm. and their processes. To me, you don't necessarily have to replace technology in order to make it more efficient. You know, there's a lot of tools that people have in their tech stack right now that can be more streamlined, that, you know, there's new features that have been added to, you know, the cloud-based solution. And sometimes they don't even realize that there's new functionality that they can take advantage of. So making sure that you're using all of that. I would also say, you know, the trend that we've been seeing is people really adapting to using technology rather than people for those repeatable processes, those manual processes. And that really is the right path to be more effective, to sustain, to maintain that growth pattern for your organization. You have to be using technology. People should be used for the client-facing, the people-facing interactions that need to happen. You should not be hiring people for data entry anymore.
Yeah,
there's just no need for that. So it really has to be about using people where they're best used and using technology where it's best used.
Yeah, so I would say, listening to that, and you know, if I were someone who kind of is responsible for, you know, technology, you know, I'd be looking for systems or tools that maybe are tired or not meeting your needs, right? And that might be a good place to start. I'd also be thinking about maybe being more cloud-based with my technology. And I think that organizationally, as firms have changed and we've seen kind of a new influx of talent, that there's certainly a desire or a willingness to move from having my own server closet, right, and having local install, and really moving towards a SaaS or cloud-based set of solutions that can be better integrated with one another instead of having all of these kind of one-off standalone solutions. How does that strike you, Verity?
I couldn't agree more. And I would say that that is absolutely also a trend that we're seeing with users. I look back over the 20 plus years I've been in the industry, and, you know, mind you, my background's in IT, and the number of users and even owners of these investment firms that have been so adamant about thinking that having locally installed applications is more secure. That is not the case anymore. Honestly, it really hasn't been for a long time. Going cloud-based can actually be more secure. You're actually, you know, the cybersecurity policies and protection that is in place by these companies is way more advanced than anything you as an individual RAA or asset manager could do yourself.
Absolutely. I have a client that kind of to what you're talking about. I mean, there are so many risks here, and there are ways to make things better, but there's also key person risk. Mm-hmm. A client of ours came to us specifically because they were worried that the one person who knew how to run the proprietary system, if they got hit by a bus, or if they decided they didn't want to work there anymore, what were they going to do? They're like, we'll be fine for a week, but, you know, it always needs some help, right? And so if that person goes away, gets hurt, doesn't come in the next day, what are we going to do? And so they felt like, from an organizational and client risk standpoint, they had to move to a new set of tools that could really support them. So I think that, you know, technology improvements really can be a driver for a lot of things: risk reduction, delivery of client service, delivery of the client engagement that you've kind of signed up for. Can technology improvements be a driver for service expansion and scalability within my organization?
Absolutely. 100%. In fact, I think that that's also another key driver that we see when people are looking to change technology solutions. It is a lot for the scalability of their business. It could be for maybe your growth strategy is, you know, to double in AUM over the course of the next 3 years. Well, to do that sustainably, you know, and cost effectively, you can't go and double your staff. So you need to take advantage of technology. If you are looking to invest in other asset classes, or, you know, to go into foreign markets, and maybe your current tech stack does not support anything besides US currency, you know, I mean, there's countless reasons here that, you know, are reasons why or how businesses are wanting to scale, but their technology may not support it, and they need to make some changes.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that, you know, fundamentally, there are questions that every organization should be asking themselves as they're contemplating any of these changes. And I think that the first one, the most basic one, is, are we open to it?
Oh,
are we
absolutely.
Open to change, right? And I'm sure we both have stories of firms like, we're going to make this change. And then within the organization, everybody's like, no, we don't want to give up our old blue screen or green screen, or we don't want to give up our Excel macro that we've been using for so long. And then I think that the other one too is, are we including the right people in the overall evaluation? That's the other part, right? That people don't always include the right folks. Decisions are made in a bit of a vacuum, and you end up with a suboptimal outcome, whatever that is. Wrong technology, bad fit, good technology. So many different ways that this can go sideways.
Absolutely. I see those things happen all the time. You know, we help with a lot of implementations. And one of the things that has been very frustrating as a consultant is where someone is moving from one platform to another, and all they're doing is trying to replicate all their same processes and procedures and, you know, just ways of doing things, the same reports in their new system. Like, why are you even changing then? I mean, the point of moving to new technology is to change. And so you have to be open to making things different and having a different way of doing things, possibly delivering different results, not results, but different data points, different reports to your clients. Otherwise, don't make a change. Don't change your software if you're not willing to change your processes and, you know, what you deliver to your clients. Yeah, and then similarly, like on, as you mentioned, right, with the right people involved, every technology platform that is being used, there is a touch point by nearly everybody in the organization. So making sure that people, that everybody across the organization is involved in decisions and process improvements. Not saying that you have to involve literally every person in the firm, but at least key resources in every single department. Because again, if you don't have that acceptance and adoption, you know, that user experience is ultimately going to fail.
Yep. Couldn't agree more. You know, if I had to wrap generally up this conversation and being as it's the holidays, if I had to put a bow on it, the firms that invest in optimizing their technology and, you know, in the context of their organizational needs are going to be winners in 2024 and on. And they're going to be doing that by mitigating risk, scaling in a very smart fashion, and generating more opportunities for organic growth. Thanks for joining today's episode of In the Money. Verity, thank you. You've been the best as always. Appreciate your time and your insights. If you don't know Flyer FT, we provide the fintech you love and use every day. My name is Rusty Summer, and this is In the Money. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to In the Money, the show that delivers advisors, asset managers, broker dealers, and other technology service providers the knowledge they need to navigate this industry. Don't forget to click the follow button to be notified when new episodes become available. The information covered and posted represents the views and opinions of the guest and does not necessarily represent the views or opinions of Flyer Financial Technologies. The content has been made available for informational and educational purposes only.